Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kutet Zayin Amud Aleph, four lines down. Pasukin Shoftim, with regards to the incident of Pilegish Begiva, the Pasuk says, Vayomru, Yerushat Pleita the Binyamin. We need to leave over some residual inheritance for Binyamin. Velo Yimachesh Shevet Miyisrael. And there should not be a Shevet that is wiped out from amongst Klal Yisrael. The battles of Pilegish Begiva left Binyamin, or Shevet Binyamin, bereft of almost anyone. And so the Shvatim come together to preserve them afterwards. So they have etzot about how to bring wives to the men of Binyamin. As we know, there were only 600 men that were left from Binyamin. They married the women of Yavesh Gilad, who had been wiped out because they didn't show up for the Cherem to fight against the Binyamin. And so therefore they had the women left over, which the people of Binyamin, or the men of Binyamin who were residual, married, as well as the story in the Shiloh with the dancing in the Kerem and picking out wives, at another 200 there. So a total of 600 men from Shevet Binyamin. Given that, we have very few inheritors of Shevet Binyamin, and they're going to divide up all the property, all the area of Shevet Binyamin. That means that each person has a very large tract of land, or section of Shevet Binyamin, given it was a large Shevet, and now you have very few people left from Shevet Binyamin. So Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Debei Rabbi Ami Mlameid Shitnua Shevet Binyamin Shlotirash Bata Ben Imachim, that they put in, or instituted at that time, that the daughter of a son will not inherit with the sons. That's what we just spoke about previously, in terms of the fact that a daughter will step into the shoes of the father. So if you have a number of brothers who are going to split the Yerusha, and one of them passes away before his father, and he has daughters that will inherit him, the daughters step into his shoes, and they're on par, a level playing field with the other brothers, and they will inherit amongst the other brothers, similar to Benot Tzlafchad, who step into the shoes of their father and take Yerusha along with the brothers. The reason for that is, if it goes to the Bata Ben, if it goes down to the granddaughter, instead of to the sons, then there's a possibility that the Yerusha will move from Shevet to Shevet. And that's what we're trying to avoid over here. At this point, Shevet Binyamin is distributed among 600 people. If any section of that gets taken by another Shevet, that would be a significant portion of Shevet Binyamin being given to another Shevet. So to avoid that problem, they instituted at that time that they didn't want the Bat HaBen to inherit. The mechanism which they used, according to Rashbam, is Hefker, Beit Din, Hefker. Beit Din interfered, or I must put an injunction against them inheriting, and did that through the mechanism of Hefker, Beit Din, Hefker, which is Beit Din is allowed to move monetary ownership from person to person, and that's how they did it. Aval, the Rashbam says, Im lo iniach banim, ela banot. What happens in a situation where they left no children, no male children, only daughters? Gam bata bat tiroshimahem. Then the daughter of the daughter, I mean the granddaughter, would inherit in that case. In that case, you're not preventing anything from happening. Already they are daughters that are inheriting. Their daughters are inheriting, and then you have one of the daughters predeceased their father. And he had daughters, so there were granddaughters. They would be halakhically on par with the other daughters. The granddaughters would be on par with the daughters. There we would not disown them of their Yerusha, because there's no difference between the granddaughter and the daughters owning the property. Either way, it's at risk of moving Shvatim. The mate doesn't want the Yerusha leaving his family or leaving his descendants. So he's not going to agree, or we're not going to institute something where we're going to disown him of his Yerusha completely. In a case where there are male inheritors, then it's not a problem, because then for sure there'll be someone who carries on his name. To then disinherit the granddaughter, that's not a big deal. But here where it's all daughters and a granddaughter, there's no way you're going to have him agree to be disinherited completely from his property. Inami, the other possibility is, Echadika banot ubata ben. What happens in a situation where you have daughters and a granddaughter who comes to a son? Tirosh bata ben et kol hanechasim. So there, interesting enough, halachically, the bata ben, who is the granddaughter, has priority, because a son amongst the daughters would inherit everything. And over here, the son who predeceased his father has a daughter, a granddaughter to the person who's passing away now and passing Yerusha, so that granddaughter does have priority halachically over the daughters. The reason that you would do that is because mistama ayu nizarot shlo ninaseh l'shevet acher. In that case, you would give priority to the granddaughter over the other daughters because she's coming through the son, despite the fact that you have a risk now that it would change ownership or she would marry into a different shevet. Again, the assumption being likely that the daughters are already married, so you'd know if it's moving or not. But here, they would be careful about not moving to a different shevet. So that's what the Rashbam explains happened over here. The Marsha, interestingly enough, asks, why didn't they institute something similar to the Benot Slavchad? In the time of the Torah, they instituted that the Benot Slavchad could inherit as long as they married someone from their shevet. So why didn't they just put in a temporary injunction that any daughter who wanted to inherit just had to marry someone from their shevet? So he says that he didn't think it was a plausible solution because in the time of the Midbar, the Benot Slavchad had the choice of all of Shevet Menashe to marry. It was a large shevet, plenty of people around. Given what had happened with the story of Binyamin, there were very few choices. Meaning that if you had a daughter inheriting here, there weren't that many males around in order to marry, and he had very limited choices. So he said that he didn't think that was a viable solution, and that's why they don't institute it. On the other hand, you can see at the end of the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says, V'akshav itkinu leBinyamin, shlo tirash bata ben imachim, kedei shlo tisob nachala, alvim rotzeli nasei lacher mishifta tiroshim achim. Rabbeinu Gershom says it was not a fixed policy that the granddaughter would not inherit along with the sons if she was a daughter to a son who had passed away, because it depended on what she chose to do. If she chose to marry within the Shevet, they would give her the Yerusha. If she chose not to marry within the Shevet, then they wouldn't give the Yerusha. It's kind of a middle position that the Rabbeinu Gershom is espousing here, which is that we would only forfeit their rights to the Yerusha if they didn't marry into the Shevet. But if they chose to marry into the Shevet, then we would give it to them. Again, the Rashbam's scenario where they're only daughters and there is also a granddaughter, over there there's no reason either to disinherit the granddaughter or in a case where it's a granddaughter through the son to not allow her to inherit because no matter what, it's going to end up with female inheritors. And in that case, we would say take it and just make sure you marry someone from the Shevet, despite the difficulty, but they would try his best to keep it within Shevet Binyamin. So now, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So here is a good example of what the Rashbam said 2 days ago, that when the Gemara says Mishum, it means that this is not his Rebbe Mamuvhak. He's saying over something or occasional memrote from that individual. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is clearly not the Rebbe Mamuvhak of Rabbi Yochanan. In all likelihood, Rabbi Yochanan never saw Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. It's interesting in general that throughout Shas, Rabbi Yochanan does quote Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. I'm not sure whether they ever saw each other, because Rabbi Yochanan is a first generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. He was in the back rows of Rabbi's shir. Rabbi's son is a chavrusa with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's son, with Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. And Rabbi Yochanan sits in the back rows of Rabbi's shir. So the likelihood that Rabbi Yochanan learned by Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is very low. He barely learned by Rabbi, who is already younger than Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So it would be unlikely that he was his Rabbo Amuvhak. And again, what the Rashbam says, that the fact that it uses the word Mishum over here, is also indicative of the fact that it wasn't his Rabbi Amuvhak. He might have learned some things by him, he might have seen him, but it seems to me that he probably didn't spend a lot of time with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. The main Rebbeim of Rabbi Yochanan are Talmidim of Rabbi, like Rabbi Yanai, Rabbi Oshaya. Those are the main Rebbeim that Rabbi Yochanan quotes. And that would make him even further away from Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, Kol Sheinu Miniach Ben Yorsho, person who does not leave over a son to inherit him, Kodesh Baruch Hu Malei Alav Evra. Kodesh Baruch Hu is full of Evra, generally is translated to mean anger, wrath. Although over here, the Rabbeinu Chananel was brought in the Rashbam, says Sone Oto. Hashem dislikes him or hates him. Tivocha, it says with regards to the Yerusha, the Parshiyah of Nachalot, Vavartem et Nachalato, which is what we've been learning about with regards to the Bat that is inheriting. Uchtivotam, and it says in Tzfanya, Yom Evra Hayomahu, that day is a day of anger, of wrath. And then in Tehillim it says, Asher ein chalifot damo velo yaru'u elukim. So since they have no replacement, velo yaru'u elukim, and they have no fear of God. Truth is that there may not be the pashtut of pasuk because of what precedes it in the pasuk. It sounds like that a Kodesh Baruch Hu, who is permanently there, or is eternal, or everlasting, Asher ein chalifot damo, who has no replacement, velo yaru'u elukim, and he'll deal with those that do not fear God. And those that don't fear God should be fearing God, because God has no replacement, and they will be replaced. That's implicit in the pasuk. So Gemara reads it, Asher ein chalifot damo, the one who does not leave himself a replacement, velo yaru'u elukim. They are considered not to fear God. Over here, it's not clear from the Gemara what it means, kol shei minyach ben liyosho. Again, throughout the Torah, throughout the Gemara, the terminology of ben can be used to mean two things. A ben can refer to a male son, or a ben can refer to an offspring, to a child. So it's never clear whether you say a ben, you mean offspring, or you mean a male child. The Marsha, in interpreting this over here, seems to indicate that it is a male child that is not leaving, because ben liyorsho, a son to inherit him. And the Marsha says or differentiates between males and females in this way, muvar ki olam hazeh olam over v'olam haba hu hanitzchi. This world is a passing entity, and olam haba is everlasting or eternal. And that's why in the pasuk it says yom evra. Evra, uvartem nachalato, the havara of nachala, which happens when you have a daughter, havara is something that's of passing nature. So that references to olam hazeh. Whereas the nitzchi, the eternal lasting olam haba. Vaya ikar briyat adam hu azachar. So the primary creation of man was the male. Shaloni rab tchila rak azachar, because he was created alone. Shav shebolam hazeh uver haya, so even though he was created into this passing world, he was given the opportunity to do mitzvot in order to ensure that he has an everlasting life in olam haba. It's not true of the female. She ikar briyata l'kiyum amin. Her major purpose is for the procreation and the ensuring of the continuation of humankind. Olam hazeh olam over. So he sees the representation of the male is olam haba, and the representation of the nekeva is olam hazeh. And he says, "Velo mimalei mimkomo zachar dekeim mitzvot boro lamin olam nitzchi delatid." So it seems from the Marsha, he's saying that the criticism here is this: is someone didn't leave behind a son who will do mitzvot and then continue to produce or focus on the olam nitzchi. If he leaves only a daughter, then he's only leaving someone who will create procreation and the continuation of the min. It's a very interesting distinction that he makes between the zachar and the nekeva. I would have argued that the main issue here is the immortality of an individual. Someone who does not have offspring, then that person is left as a mortal being, or they think that they can do or accomplish everything in their lifetime, and that they are a permanent fixture. They don't need to have something that makes them immortal. If you have children, irrespective of whether it's male or female, that gives a certain amount of immortality to the individual and a realization of their passing purpose in this world. And so therefore, with all respect to the Marsha, I think I would have interpreted it to mean both ben and zachar, and the lack of offspring is a failure in Yirat Elukim, because this person doesn't understand that they are going to be mortal and that they need to create some sort of continuation of themselves, and they can't accomplish everything in their lifetime. The Adram over here claims that this is only referring to someone who didn't try, but if someone who tried and they're unsuccessful, that that's not their fault. Problem is that later on in the sugya it does not sound that way. We'll see that from the way that the sugya develops. I think it would be nice to explain it that way, but unfortunately, I don't think the sugya lays out the way that the Yered Ramah says, but he does say or make such a comment. So now the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Chad amar kol she'im meniach ben, v'chad amar kol she'im meniach talmid. One of them says that the statement or this anger or the person who's not considered to be a Yarei Elukim references to someone who does not leave an offspring, does not leave a child. The other one says it refers to someone who does not leave a talmid, does not leave over a student. Over here, the Rabbeinu Gershom says with regards to that, Shelo Ratzel Lameid Torah L'Acherim. It's a similar idea or concept to which I expressed before with not leaving a child. This is a person who didn't want to share the Torah that they had. They did not want to pass it on. They didn't want to teach the Torah that they had. So again, it's a very selfish view of the world, an idea that you are the sole person that needs to have this Torah and needs to do what it is, but you don't have to create any hemshechiyut, any continuation to that which you are accomplishing, and that you yourself can accomplish everything you need to do. So the lack of a talmid is similar to a lack of a ben in that case, according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, and is also similar to the Mamar Chazal, that a person who is mamid a talmid is ge'ilu mamid ben. And that's why the Torah assigns the children of Aaron to Moshe, who taught them Torah. So again, it's not far-fetched to connect between the two here, the talmid and the ben, as being a continuation of the individual. So now the Gemara says, tistayim. Let us conclude, the Rabbi Yochanan damar talmid. It must be Rabbi Yochanan who was the one who said that, the member with regards to talmid, damar Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yochanan says over, it's found in the Gemara in Brachot, dein garmei dasira'a bir. This is the bone of my 10th child. The story with regards to Rabbi Yochanan is all of his children, here's the 10th of his children, passed away during his lifetime, predeceased him, and he used to carry around the bone from the youngest of his children that had passed away. The Rashbam over here brings that it was a shein, it was a tooth, because that was something that is not mekabel tumah. Rashi in Brachot says that he carried a bone that was less than the size of a se'ora. It wasn't mitameh. But as the Rashbam says over here, he used to use it, ubo'ayam menachem lemarei nefesh avelim. He would use that to console people who were be'avelut and say, listen, things could be a lot worse. Things could be much more difficult. Number one, because I've lost 10 children. Whatever's happened to you has got to be less than that. And number two is that, look, I'm still around. I'm still doing and I'm still accomplishing despite that difficulty. So he used to use that to be Menachem Avel. What you see here is that Rabbi Yochanan lost all of his children. So he definitely wouldn't want to be the one saying that someone who doesn't have Hemshechiyut, doesn't have children, is considered not to be a Yarei Elukim. He wouldn't be going around and being Menachem Avel with his bone to show that all of his children passed away, when that's a demonstration of lack of Yirat Elukim. As the Rashbam says over here, it's mechutzav to be mefarsem a chait. If you consider it to be a chait that the children pass away or the person doesn't have offspring, then why would you go around being mefarsem, publicizing that issue? Because it says, Ashrei nasui pesha kisui chata'a. So it's better to cover up your chataim. You shouldn't make this into a public issue. So based on that, the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan wouldn't have been the one who authored such a position. From here, you see against what the Yad Ramah said before, because over here, clearly, Rabbi Yochanan tried, and his children predeceased him. It wasn't his fault that his children passed away. Nevertheless, the Gemara sees that as being a failure in that memra. Tistayim, the Rabbi Yochanan damar tamid. From this, you would conclude that Rabbi Yochanan must be the one who said the memra with regards to tamidim, because Rabbi Yochanan had plenty of tamidim. That's what he did his whole life. He taught Torah. Umid Rabbi Yochanan amar tamid. Well, if Rabbi Yochanan is the author of the position with regards to the Tamid, Rabbi Shua ben Levi amar ben. That clearly Rabbi Shua ben Levi is the one who says it about a child. That's problematic, because now we have a member from Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi that seems to indicate otherwise. But Rabbi Shua ben Levi, lo azel beit tamyo, he would not go to the beit ha'avel, ela the beit man deshachi below bani, only to the individual who passed away without leaving any children. So, in general, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, the way the Rashbam formulates it over here is that he would not attend the house of Navel because of Bittul Torah. But when it came to something that was extreme, like an individual who passed away without children, then Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi would make his business to go to that Beit Avel. The Rabbeinu Gershom says it is because of Mipnei Agmat Nefesh. Because of the tremendous pain of someone who passes away, doesn't leave offspring, doesn't leave a continuation of themselves. The Rabbeinu Gershom says the same thing with regards to Rabbi Yochanan, why he carried around the bone, because of Agmat Nefesh. So Rabbi Shua ben Levi, clearly, if he believed that it was someone who was not Yarei Elukim, who was left without offspring, he wouldn't go out of his way just to visit that Beit Avel. Doesn't make sense. He wouldn't go to any Beit Avel just to these, and these people he believes are not Yarei Elukim because they're left without offspring. So it's counterintuitive to believe that's what he would do. On the other hand, I think that it also might be that Rabbi Shua ben Levi went to such a house because someone who passes away without offspring, then there's no one to give kavod amet. There's no one to take care, even maybe say kaddish, do something I prefer the mate. That's so Rabbi Shuben Levi took upon himself to give some sort of kavod to this mate and to ensure that there was a proper continuation for the mate despite the lack of children. He would do this, dichtiv, because it says in Yirmiyahu, b'chu b'cho la'olich, go and cry and weep for the one who is going. The context of the pasuk is with regards to those that are left in Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. And Yirmiyahu says, don't cry for those that are dead, because those that are dead will remain here. Cry for those that are still alive, because they're going to leave here and they will never see it again. They're going to be put into galut and they're not going to return to Yerushalayim. V'amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav, so depending on the way that you have the girsa here, the girsa that we have in our Gemaras, the Olech below Ben Zachar, that's someone who leaves behind without a male child. If you look in the Bach, he changes the girsa to the Olech below Banim, someone who goes without children. That would go back to the discussion we had before as to whether the focus of Rabbi Yochanan's statement was on a Ben Zachar or on Banim, on children in general. So depending which way you think, they would change the girsa over here. But this reference is, according to Vito Marav, to someone who's going without children. He uses that pasuk, b'chol b'chol la'haleich, to cry for the one who is going over here, meaning that he has left this world and will not be returning, because his death is an everlasting death, because he didn't leave behind any continuation, didn't leave behind any zera. So therefore he invoked that pasuk to say that you need to cry, you need to weep over this, because this is a serious agmat nefesh, difficult emotional thing that someone is passing away without leaving any descendants. Ella Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi hu damar tamid. So it must be that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is the one who said tamid, because he clearly can't say about children. He went to the house of the Avel, someone without children, and he wouldn't do that if they were not considered to be Yarei Elokim. So Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi hu damar tamid. Now, if Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi is the one who says the memory with regards to tamid, Rabbi Yochanan amar ben. That means Rabbi Yochanan said it about a ben. So Gemara says, kash Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan. That is in contradiction in the positions of Rabbi Yochanan, then why was he walking around with the bone of his 10th child if he felt negatively about that? Lokasha, Hadidei, Adarabe. He quoted before the Memra in the name of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. That's the position of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Yochanan's quoting it. Rabbi Yochanan himself did not subscribe to that, and therefore he kept the bone or the tooth of his 10th child because he didn't think or agree with Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So even though he quoted the Memra, he didn't necessarily subscribe to it. And that's why he behaved in that way. And in that way, it's not a contradiction to Rabbi Yochanan. It is a machloket between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. But Rabbi Yochanan himself did not subscribe to it. All right. Dorash Rabbi Pinchas ben Chamo. Maidichtiv. What is meant by the pasuk in Melachim Aleph? Vadad shama b'mitzrayim. Hadad gets word in Mitzrayim. Ki shechav David im abutav. That David has passed away. V'chi meit Yoav tzar tzava. That Yoav, the general of his army, also had died. So Hadad was taken to Mitzrayim as a child. He was part of Edom and Aram. At the time that David conquered those areas, really Yoav, the general of the army, conquered those areas. And at that time, Yoav stays, the pasuk says, for 6 months in that area, wipes out all the males. His father, Hadad, escaped with a bunch of men. They went down to Mitzrayim to escape from David and Yoav. David installs a king or somebody there to take care of the area. In the time of Shlomo HaMelech, they rebel and they stop paying taxes. So Hadad, who is the son and was a baby or a young child when this all happened, went and lived in Mitzrayim. He ended up finding favor in the eyes of Paro and marries his sister-in-law, his Paro's wife's sister. And he stays in Mitzrayim and grows into the royalty of Mitzrayim. At some point, he asks to take leave of Mitzrayim from Paro, and Paro says, why, things are so good here, why are you going back? He goes back because he wants to lead a rebellion of sorts. He wants to take back the areas that belonged once to his family, because he's a descendant of royalty from that area. So he goes back to establish a kingdom or some sort of fiefdom back in Aram. When he does that is after David and Yoav pass away, because they were the arch enemies of his father and the ones that had wiped out the area. So he loses that fear once they have passed away in the time of Shlomo HaMelech. The news that he receives in Mitzrayim is that David and Yoav have passed away. But if you look carefully, in the pasuk it says, Mipnei mad David ne'emra bo shechiva, It talks about David's passing. It says that he was shochev, that he lay down to rest. Ubiyoav ne'ama bomita. By Yoav, it says that he died. Why does the Navi use two different words to describe the death of David versus the death of Yoav? The truth is that you could differentiate simply by the means of their death. David dies a natural death, shechiva. He was laying on his bed and he passed away from old age. Yoav, because David had instructed Shlomo HaMelech to take care of him, and he's killed. He doesn't die a natural death. So you could explain the puzzle simply in that way, which is one of them died of age, and one of them died mitav, because he was killed. But yet, the Gemara over here gives a different answer, which is David, sheniach ben, nemra bo shechiva. David, who left a son behind, it says shechiva. Yoav shloiniach ben nemra bo mita. Yoav does not leave a son behind, it says mita. This would again be this idea that if you leave a child behind, here it seems to be favoring a ben zachar, but if you leave a child behind, then shechiva, you're just resting, because you gain a certain amount of immortality through the child. Whereas if you don't leave a child behind, then there's mita. That's the end. There's a real death that happens because there's no continuation. Yoav lo niach ben? Wait, did Yoav really not leave a child? Vaktiv, mibnei Yoav, Ovadia ben Yechiel. Gives you the descendants of Yoav. It mentions that he had a son, Ovadia ben Yechiel. So how do you say that he didn't leave a son behind? Again, it seems to here be favoring ben Zachar versus offspring. Ella, David shiniach ben kimoto. David, who left the child who was of a similar ilk to himself, nemra bo shechiva. Then there's shechiva. Yoav shloniach ben kimoto, nemra bo mita. That, for him, it's death. So this idea is taken a step further, which is, not only is the child considered to be emshechiyut, a continuation, it gives you a certain amount of immortality, it's important that the child continue the ways of the father. You only gain that immortality if the child carries on the mission of the father. The same way that Yitzchak, in a sense, made Abraham immortal, because Yitzchak did exactly or carried on the mission of his father. He took what Abraham had started and he makes it into something that is a fixture and that is yetziv, established or steadfast, and that's the next generation. In doing so, he made Abraham, in a sense, immortal or eternal. Whereas if the child like Ishmael, who does not carry on the ways of Abraham, that would not be considered to be a certain amount of immortality because he doesn't represent the values that Abraham was espousing during his lifetime. So that's the difference here. So even though Yoav did leave a child, the child of Yoav was not on the level of his father, didn't continue the ways of his father. This is based on the Chazal. We saw this in Baba Kama, that Yoav was a Talmud Chacham, and that he was a big Lamdan. And he has halachic arguments with David and so on and so forth. So that would be the idea here, that he didn't leave a child that was of his ilk or of his stature. I assume that the Gemara knows that from the fact that his son did not become the general of the army versus David's son, who does become the king. Although there might be a difference there, and you could easily understand why a kingship is passed hereditarily to the next generation, whereas generals don't necessarily bequeath their position to their children. Nevertheless, the Gemara makes that distinction. And now that we brought in Rav Pinchas ben Chama, Gemara brings other memrod from him. Darash Rav Pinchas ben Chama, kashe aniyut betoch beito shel adam, yuter mi mechamishim makot. That aniyut, poverty within the house of a person, is much worse than 50 makot. Shenamar, so we're going to do what we did in the Haggadah. Chanuni atem rei, be merciful, be kind to me, my friends. Kiyad eluka nagabi, the hand of God has hit me. V'kamri lechavrei, and his friends respond to him. Hishamer, al tefen el oven, don't turn to the wrong. Ki alze b'charta mioni, that you should pick this or submit to this or give submission then to poverty. Do not submit to poverty. So these are the friends of Iyov. Iyov suffers greatly. And despite his suffering, his friends are telling him things are still better than it could be because you haven't reached poverty. Now, both the Rishbam and the Balei Tosfot deal with the fact that Iyov, it says in the beginning of Iyov, that his property was taken away and all of his flocks were taken away. Seems like he was impoverished. It seems like all of his valuables were taken away. So Balei Tosfot indicate over here that that was only his flocks and his karka, but his kesef and his zahav and his stored wealth in terms of money or precious metals, stayed with him. And therefore, he never reached a level of poverty. And even though at the end of Iyov, his friends bring him gifts, of Zahav and Kesef, that was not because he needed it. It wasn't because he was impoverished that they bring it to him, but simply as gifts showing their friendship and love towards him, not because of his loss of wealth. And Tosva deals with other psukim that seem to indicate that he was impoverished. Nevertheless, the Chazal play on this pasuk, which seems to indicate that they are saying to him, anything is better than poverty. Just don't fall to poverty. And the reason that we see over here that it's Chamishim Makot is because Yad Eluka, the hand of God. And so similar to the way that we speak about in the Agadah, that Etzba Elukim, the finger of God, reference to the 10 Makot, then the hand of God would be 50 Makot. And that's the drosha here, that 50 Makot are better than aniyut, better than being impoverished. And the Rashbam says, from this you learn, person has to daven that they don't fall into poverty. That's what you learn from this. That's the lesson from this is, you should beseech Hashem not to fall into poverty because that is worse than 50 Makot. And again, that the problems of Makot, in a sense, are passing issues, whereas poverty is something that stays and precipitates other problems and other difficulties associated with it. So one should do their best and daven hard to Hashem that they shouldn't fall into that situation. And similarly, if someone is found with difficulties or has a difficult life, they should not be meharher achrei midat din, because there are things that could be worse, which is that they could reach that level of poverty or being impoverished, and therefore a person should say that Hashem is still having rachamim on them, and that they're in a better situation or circumstance than many other people, despite the difficulties that they are undergoing. Darash Rav Pinchas Bar Chama, it's another memra from Rav Pinchas Bar Chama. Kol sheyesh lo chole betoch beito, yelech etzel chacham. Anyone who has someone who's sick or ill in their house should go to the chacham, v'yivakesh alav rachamim. And the chacham should then intercede on behalf of the individual. Shenemar, the pasuk says, in Mishlei, chamat melech malachei mavet, that the anger of God is manifest in the angel of death, which is that someone who was sick in their day, especially Erez Devai, they were on their deathbed. That was someone who was at risk of dying where the Malach HaMavet is hanging around. V'ish chacham yichafrena. And the wise man can be mechaper. The real translation of the word kapara is lekaneach, means to wipe away. The kaparot are the utensils in the mikdash that were used to hold the blood. And the Kohen wipes his finger on the side of it, and that's why they were called kaparot. So kapara is to wipe away. And so the chacham wipes away that sin. Marsha points out, interesting enough, that malachei mavet is in plural, because Hashem has many messengers, that's the way the Gemara phrases it. He can get to the person in different ways. So Hashem has many ways to cause death or to cause the person to pass away. Ish chacham yichaprena is in the singular, because there are only a few people where you can go to that can intercede on your behalf and help you to defend against this malach hamavet or to gain kapara for you. I would phrase it in the following manner, which is that when someone falls ill, we always call in the doctor, you go to the hospital. So just like in a physical sense, there is choli that needs to be treated by the physical doctor, so too, when a person falls ill, there's also a spiritual illness that's associated with that. And there you need to go to the spiritual doctor. And the spiritual doctor is the chacham. And that chacham can intercede to correct the spiritual illness that is there in order that the physical illness will also be cured, because now that the spiritual illness is cured, it will, by definition, allow for the physical illness to be cured. Zeklau. So now we're back into our Mishnah. Kol HaKodem B'Nachala. Anybody who is earlier in the hierarchy of inheritance, Yotzei Yerechol Kodmim. Then his descendants go first. That already we saw in the Mishnah, that the son of the son, the daughter of the son, would precede his sisters, because they are coming in the power of the son. They come with the power of the individual who they are representing, or who are their descendants of. And then the last line was, Va'av Kodim L'chol Yotzei Yerechol. The father takes precedence over all of his descendants, and that is the order that we saw. We discussed it in yesterday's daf. By Rami Bar Chama. So Rabbi Bar Chama was created. Avia Av, if you have the grandfather, Va'achea Av, and the uncles, Kegon. And what is an example of this? Abraham v'Ishmael b'Nichsei Esav. When we have the Nichasim of Esav, and assuming here that Esav has no children, and has no brothers. The Rashbam over here points out that the Gemara used Esav as the example because he died. And so therefore they want to make Esav the Rasha who dies. So they use Esav as the example rather than Yaakov. You could give the same example with Yaakov instead of Esav, but they gave it with Esav because he died. It's interesting because further on the Rashbam himself in bringing examples talks about Yaakov and others that when Avram who passed away. Nevertheless, he says the Gemara picked Esav who passed away with no children and no brothers. And his father already had passed away, which means that Yitzchak is not alive. The two that are remaining alive are his grandfather, Abraham, who is his grandfather, and his uncle, Ishmael. So the question is, who takes precedence over here? The uncle Ishmael or the grandfather Abraham? If you look in the Psukim, in the order of the Psukim, it's Ben, Bat, then Achim, then brothers, then uncles. There's no mention of grandfather, just like there's no mention of father in the Psukim. So father, we already inserted between Ben and Bat and Achim. We inserted the father between the son, daughter, and the brothers. So it goes son, daughter, father, brothers. But where's the grandfather fit in vis-a-vis the uncles? That's the question here. Amar Rava Tashma. Rava says, here we can see from here, Av Kodem Necho Yotzei Yerecho. The father goes before all of his Yotzei Yerecho, before all of those that are issued forth from him. The uncles are the children of the grandfather. So if that's the case, if you look in the Mishnah, the way the Mishnah is laying it out is that the father goes before Yotzei Yerecho. That means the grandfather, who is the father of the uncles, should take precedence over the uncles. V'rami Bar Chama. Why did Rabbi Bar Chama ask this question? Agav Chorig Ve Lo Ayin Ba. It's explicit in the Mishnah. Rava gives an answer that's explicit in the Mishnah. What was Rami Bar Chama thinking? It's very clear in the Mishnah that that should be the case, that the grandfather takes precedence over the uncles. So in essence, the way of the Yerusha in the Torah is Ben, then Bat, then father, then Achim, then brothers, then grandfather, then uncles. So that would be the order in the Psukim. He says, Agav Chorfei Lo Ayin Ba, the way the Rashbam reads it is, Charifut She'atarud B'Sheila Acheret. He was involved in another question, which is the next question, which is a much harder question. And because he was involved in that harder question, he wasn't able to deal with this question. He wasn't thinking about it. The other end, the Rabbeinu Gershom says, Shaya Machzir Talmudo Loayin Ba. He was doing Chazara on something else, and he didn't think about it. It was on the top of his head. He just mentioned it. So he didn't think carefully about the Mishnah, that it was an explicit Mishnah. So now we dealt with that problem. Now we get on to the next issue, which is the harder question, which is Bai Rami Bar Chama. Avia Av Ve'echav. What about the grandfather versus the brothers? Kagon, what's the situation here? Avraham v'Yaakov v'nechse Esav. Esav passes away without any children. And again, his father, Yitzchak, has already passed away, predeceased him. So now Esav passes away. No children, no father. Next in line, in the Torah at least, is brothers. So his brother Yaakov would inherit him. Although, now we just inserted grandfather into the picture. So by grandfather, we said it sat between brothers and uncles. We're asking, is that really true? Does the grandfather sit between the brothers and the uncles? Or does the grandfather come right after the father before the brothers? So that's the question here. Avraham, Esav's grandfather, and Yaakov, Esav's brother, which of those two takes precedence? Is man kodem? Amar Rava, Rava says, well, let's look at the Mishnah, Tashma. Kodem l'chol yotzei reicho. Rava gives the same answer that he gave previously, which is a father will always go before his descendants or those that issue forth from him. So the assumption based on what Rava is saying is that when Esav passes away and there is nobody to inherit him, he has no children, and then it's going to move either to the father, but if there's no father, it moves to the brothers. But when it moves up to his father Yitzchak, we have to reassess the situation. Because Yitzchak now is in possession of the property. We said Yitzchak already passed away, so then it would go to his brothers. But now maybe we have to reassess that. Because if Yitzchak is the one who's inheriting it, and then we say with the absence of Yitzchak, it goes to the brother of Esav Yaakov, maybe when it's in the hands of Yitzchak, looking from Yitzchak's perspective, his father, Abraham, would take precedence over his children, over the brothers of Esav. And that's the question of the Gemara, and that's what Rova is indicating over here, which is that once you say that the Yerusha passes to someone who has passed away, and then we say, well, if there's nobody there to take the Yerusha, it passes to the next closest of kin, but when it reaches Yitzchak, there is a close kin now. There's a father, Abraham, who could inherit Yitzchak. So maybe it should go to Abraham instead of going back to the brother of Esav, to Yaakov. So that's the nature of Rava's position, which is once it goes to Yitzchak, it should go up to Yaakov. The problem then you have, which is what the Bali Tosaf point out, is Uladurav. Sheyasavur Shavram Kodim Yaakov Ein Ben Yereshit Aviv. If that's the case, a child will never inherit his father. Because there's always someone who is closer of kin, meaning that why should a child inherit his father when the father of the father should go first? If you always give precedence to the father, the grandfather, over the children, then that means that you would always go up instead of down. And that would mean that a child would never inherit. There are those that want to answer on behalf of Rava to say that it depends. If the father has passed away and the grandfather is alive, in that case, we would say that the grandfather takes precedence over the brothers. But if the grandfather already has passed away, then we wouldn't say that. It's only because here Avram's alive that we say that we are determining whether he goes to Avram or Yaakov. And there Rava says it goes to Avram. But in a situation in which Avram is not alive, he wouldn't say that. And that means that a child could inherit. A child could inherit when his father passes away and the grandfather is not alive. So that's a way to deal with Rava's answer, even though Rava's answer is somewhat difficult, given that if you do follow through on Rava's position, then you would end up in a situation in which children would never inherit, because it always moved back up the line versus down the line. Barami Bar Chama, Yotzei Recho Shelo, Velo Yotzei Recho Shel Bino. Bar Chama disagrees with Rava and says, no, that's not the answer, that's not the way that we read it, because the Mishnah says that the father takes precedence over Yotzei Yerecho, takes precedence over his offspring. Yotzei Recho Shelo Velo Shel Bino. That's only his direct offspring, not his offspring in the sense of his grandchildren. It's only those that he fathered that have this rule that he takes precedence over them. But if it's he's a grandfather to them, then he does not take precedence over that. And therefore, Rami Bar Chama says Yaakov would take precedence over the grandfather in that situation. Obviously, Rava believed Bnei Banim Ariem Kim Banim, that grandchildren have the same status as a child, and therefore it would be the equivalent of Shalom. And that's how he would have to read the Mishnah against Rami Bar Chama. He says, Achanami Mistavra. The Gemara says, what Rami Bar Chama is saying is logical. Diktani, because it says, Zeaklau. Kolo kodim in achala, yotzei yerecho kodimim. That anybody who takes precedence in the hierarchy of the Yerusha, his offspring take precedence. Ve'ilu itai the Yitzchak, Yitzchak kodim. And if Yitzchak's around, then Yitzchak would be first. Hashanami deletali Yitzchak, Yaakov kodim. So now that Yitzchak is not around, Yaakov should go in his footsteps or in his place. Because our Mishnah tells us that when the person is not there, his offspring take precedence. So over here, where when Esav passes away without any children, and now we have to make a decision about the Yerusha, it passes to his father Yitzchak. Now in the possession of Yitzchak, we just said in the Mishnah, anybody who's a descendant of Yitzchak steps into the shoes of Yitzchak, and it's as if they are Yitzchak. So that's true over here too. Yaakov, who is Esav's brother, will become like Yitzchak, step into Yitzchak's shoes, and therefore he would take precedence over Abraham, the grandfather. And that's what we're saying here. Hashanami Galeta Yitzchak, Yaakov Kodem. Yaakov should be first. Shema Mina. From there you would conclude that that is the hierarchy of Nachala. Over here the Rashbam gives a summary of the Yerusha, or how Yerusha passes. Obviously we've been going over it a number of times. It goes to the Ben, goes to the son first. The son, if he has any descendants, a child, grandchild, great-grandchild, whatever it is, they would all take precedence and they would go first. If there is no son, it moves to the bat, it moves to the daughter. And similarly with the daughter, if the daughter has any offspring, if she's not alive, those offspring would take precedence in the nachala. If neither of them have offspring and neither are alive, it goes to the father. And then if there is no father, then it moves to the brothers of the deceased. And again there, with the brothers of the deceased, if they have any offspring, if they have any descendants, that would give them precedence. If there are no brothers to the deceased, it passes to the sisters of the deceased. And if, again, the sisters, if they have any descendants, the same would be true. If there are no sisters to the deceased, then it moves to the grandfather. And then from the grandfather, you would have to look again for any descendants. If there are no descendants, then it would move to the uncles of the deceased. And again there, the uncles, if there are any uncles or descendants of the uncles, they would be next in line. If there are no uncles, then it moves to the aunts of the deceased. And then again there, you look at the ants, and then you look at all the descendants of the ants of the deceased. If there's nobody there, then we go to the closest of kin afterwards, which would normally then be a great-grandfather. And then if there was no great-grandfather, you'd move to the great-uncles and great-aunts, and so on and so forth. You'd move up the Yerushalayim, expanding the tree that has access to it, because the higher up you go on the family tree, the more descendants that are possible, and that's how the Yerusha would move, according to the way that we've discussed until now. Okay, the next Mishnah tells us about Benot Tzlafchad, even though technically it's not necessarily connected to our Gemara, because of the fact that Benot Tzlafchad was in the past. And we know the din of Benot Tzlafchad, which is daughters and hair, where there are no sons, is explicitly enumerated in the Torah. The din or the halacha that came out of the story of Benot Tzlafchad has already been documented by the Torah in a halachic imperative. So why do you need to know about Benot Tzlafchad? We'll see that there are other things you can learn from Benot Tzlafchad based on what we see in this Mishnah. Benot Tzlafchad natlu gimel chalakim benachala. Benot Tzlafchad got three portions in the inheritance of Eretz Yisrael. Chelek avien, the portion of their father, Shayayim Yotzei Mitzrayim, because he was one of those that left Mitzrayim, that's the portion of Tzlafchad. V'chelko imechav, v'nechsei chefer, his chelek with amongst his brothers from their grandfather, chefer. V'shayah b'chor, because he was a firstborn, notel shnei chalakim. Tzlafchad takes two portions. So here, let's explain each one of these items. The first of which, or what is important here, is that this Mishnah clearly believes that the land of Israel was divided amongst those that left Mitzrayim. The Yotzei Mitzrayim were the determinants as to who gets the land and which people will get which chelik in the land. There is an opposing view that says Nichnasei Aretz, or Baye Aretz, those that came into the land of Israel were the ones who inherited the land. The Nafkamina would be if you have two brothers who are from Yotzei Mitzrayim. One brother has 10 children, the other brother has one child. Then if you base it off of Yotzei Mitzrayim, then those two brothers would equally divide up a section in Eretz Yisrael. And then the 10 children of the first brother would have to split that section up. And the other brother would only have one son, would have all of that property. So that one son from the two brothers would inherit as much property as all the other 10 put together. On the other hand, if it was given to the Baye Aretz, then if two brothers who left Mitzrayim, one had 10 children, one had one, then going into Eretz Yisrael, the one who had 10 children, all of those 10 children would get a portion, and so with that one, they'd all have equal portions between those 11. So it would make a difference as to whether you counted on Yotzei Mitzrayim or Baye Aretz. According to our Mishnah, it's determined by Yotzei Mitzrayim. That's number one. Number two is that Chefer, who is Tzlafchad's father, was amongst the Yotzei Mitzrayim, and so was Tzlafchad. Tzlafchad was already old enough, over the age of 20, and therefore he was also deemed to be Yotzei Mitzrayim and entitled to a Nachala in Eretz Yisrael. That means that Tzlafchad himself has a portion in Eretz Yisrael, and his father, Chefer, has a portion in Eretz Yisrael. So the daughters of Tzlafchad inherit their father's portion in Eretz Yisrael. In addition, they also inherit what their father would have inherited from his father, meaning that Chefer, when he passes away, all of his children then divide up his chelek in Eretz Yisrael, and Tzlafchad, amongst his other brothers, would inherit that property of Chefer. The Benot Tzlafchad step into the shoes of their father, and they take that portion. So that's their second portion, which is the portion amongst the brothers, the children of Chefer. In addition to that, Tzlafchad is considered to be the Bechor, even though the Psukim enumerates Tzlafchad as being the second and not the first child. The Rashbam over here speaks about that pasuk and explains that it could be read as sheni, meaning a second generation rather than the second individual, because he was a grandson, and therefore it uses the word sheni not to mean the second in the line of children, but the second generation from the one before. So Tzlafchad as a bechor is entitled to a double portion. The daughters of Tzlafchad now step into shoes and gain the rights of the bechor. And that's why they'll get a double portion from Chefer. And that's how they get their three portions. And that's what the Rashbam says we're going to learn from this. We learn three dinim from these three different portions. First of all, we learn from this that the Yotzei Mitzrayim were given the land. And that's why Tzlafchad and Chefer have portions in the land. Number two is we learn that the granddaughters meaning they are the daughters of a son, have the same status as their uncles, and they will inherit along with their uncles the property of their grandfather. Ve'eretz Yisrael muchzeket hi liyotzei Mitzrayim. This is an important factor, that Eretz Yisrael was as if in possession of those that left Mitzrayim. Natal ba b'chor pishnayim. Never the b'chor is entitled to a double portion. That is because we have a principle by a b'chor. The double portion of the b'chor is only b'muchzak. It's only in assets that are there at the time of the death, not b'ra'oy, those things that will come in the future. And so a property, for instance, in a situation where a person passes away, if that person passes away, all the assets of the property of the estate at that time, the b'chor will get a double portion in. If this person who passed away also was an inheritor of a property from someone else, and that only happened after he passed away, there the b'chor is not going to get a double portion because it's not an asset that was in his possession at the time of death. It was ra'oi to come to him, but he was not muhzak in it. He was not already muhzak in the property. But once the property comes into the possession of the father, then the b'chor gets a double portion. So now, in this situation, the Benot Slavchad are taking a double portion in Hefer's possessions. Now, first of all, the Rashbam goes through a whole issue dealing with Tosefta as to whether the Benot Slavchad can really take a double portion because he passed away, Slavchad. So the Bayit Tosafot dismiss it completely and say that the Rashbam is unnecessarily trying to figure this out because it's clear that the daughters here, Benot Slavchad, step into their father's shoes. And in stepping into their father's shoes, they get the double portion that their father would have been entitled to, despite the fact that he predeceased their grandfather. Despite the fact that he predeceased his father, they will still get a double portion. That's not called a failure in Muchzak. All that property was in the estate of their grandfather Hefer when he passed away. That's the only thing that matters. It doesn't matter whether their father's alive or not. It just matters that Hefer had it in his possession. On the other hand, if it's only something that would come to Hefer in the future, they would not be entitled to a double portion. So what you see from this is that Hefer's ownership in the land of Eretz Yisrael was considered to be muhzak, already in his possession. Because if it was only something that Hefer would get in the future, then the Bechor doesn't take a double portion in it, because that's ra'oi, and you don't get in ra'oi like you do by muhzak. So what you learn from the Mishnah is that Hefer was considered to have owned Eretz Yisrael at that moment. Because now he could take a double portion, because that's considered to be muhzak. So that's the third thing that we learn out from the Mishnah, which is that the Yotzei Mitzrayim are considered to be muhzakim in the property itself, and therefore it's subject to the rules of Bechor, because of the fact that they own the property, as if they own the property already. It's not something on the come, it's something that they have in possession already. Therefore, when Hefer passes away in the Midbar, the Benot Slavchad are entitled to a double portion in his property, despite the fact that they never entered Eretz Yisrael yet, and they have yet to take possession of that property. Okay, we're going to stop here with the beginning of the Gemara on the top of Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Aleph.